Welcome to the Stop Faking Fine podcast, a show that will empower you to finally show up for yourself while your circumstances may not be 100% your fault. Your life is 100% your responsibility. It's time to stop faking fine. Welcome back to the Stop Faking Fine podcast. I am your host, Dana Lewis. Imagine if you had permission to express what you were actually feeling without judgment, and you felt more in control of your moods and your emotions. Don't we all want that? I am so excited to introduce you to my guest today. She might just change the way that you look at therapy. Nadia Fiorita is a licensed therapist and holistic health coach. You might not think that those things go together, but for Nadia, it's been a game-changing combination for herself and her clients. Oh my goodness, Nadia, welcome to the Stop Faking Fine podcast.
Thank you so much, Dana, and congratulations on launching your podcast. I'm so excited for you, and I think this topic of faking fine is so, so important to talk about.
Oh my gosh, I am just excited to have this conversation. Thank you. Like diving deep into therapy. Like therapy can certainly come with a stigma. What made you first interested in diving into this field and becoming a therapist?
Yeah. So that's a great question. It was really my personal experience and growing up in the family that I grew up in and just having this really like strong curiosity and interest in human behavior and why we do the things that we do and psychology and family dynamics and how our experiences shape us. And I honestly, and I don't know if it was because I was naive, but like, I didn't even know about the stigma of therapy. Like I was just like, this is what I want to do. Like, this is what I'm curious about. And so when I was in college, I just started like reading all of the books and like learning all of the things.
Yeah. So like reading what, like learning the things about human behavior?
Yeah. Like it's funny because I got my undergrad in business administration from UConn. But while I was in class, like I would find myself like it's so funny. My roommate was a human development and family studies major. And I was like seeing all the things that she was learning. And I was like, oh, that's like really interesting. And that looks really interesting. And I think because I was just going through my own process of self-discovery and learning more about myself, like I was just wanting to like read those things. So, you know, family dynamics, how a family operates, the family system, how experiences shape us and then inform the decisions that we make and how we feel and the relationships that we're in and all of that. Like, I love it all. And then I started, as most young, you know, new clinicians do, I got a job at a local nonprofit behavioral health clinic and I started my clinical journey there. And I first got trained in trauma-focused therapies, which as I look back, like I'm very grateful for, because I feel like it gives me a unique lens into how a trauma or a traumatic experience, and there's a range of those, right? How those really impact us. And then I was able to just learn all of these other approaches, behavioral approaches, cognitive approaches. And so I feel like it's really kind of helped me develop into this well-rounded clinician. So yeah, I got an amazing clinical experience there. I got amazing supervision. So I'm very grateful for those experiences. I think the one thing I would say is what I learned early on, and I don't know if this was just, you know, an intuition, a wisdom inside of me, that I didn't, in those settings, the clinicians are very much underpaid and they're overworked. And they become burnt out. And I didn't want to work in that setting. I think I knew early on that I wanted to work for myself and be my own boss and have more, you know, time freedom and definitely make more money.
Yeah. Well, can you share with us, like, what was that environment like, the clinical experience that you were in? Like you mentioned that the clinicians are overworked. Like, what does that mean?
It means that when you are a nonprofit or you're receiving funds from federal grant programs or government money, you have to meet all of these standards, right? In terms of the programs that you work in or that you implement to serve clients. So you're seeing a lot of clients are doing a lot of paperwork. There's a lot of administrative stuff. I think what I felt was I wasn't actually doing all of the clinical work that I really wanted to do, like the one-on-one time with the individual person or the family or the couple. And so that was another thing that I think really just caused me a lot of stress and anxiety and feeling burnt out at that time.
Right. So what made you pivot? Like, how did you transition away from that?
Well, when I first was thinking about going to graduate school, I knew that I wanted to have my own private practice. It was just like, okay, this is what I want to do. I want to, you know, work for myself and be on my own. And I had an opportunity to pivot into private practice.
How did that change your approach? Like, now that it being out of the clinical setting, how did that change the care that you were able to give people?
You're able to really just think about and reflect on the person's situation and the issues that they're coming to you with. And I think when you feel a lot less anxious and stressed and bogged down by all the responsibilities, you have this, like, there's this space that it creates, and you really can think about the client or the case in a new way. And it helps you to gain more wisdom and gain more understanding and think about things in a different way and really have creativity when it comes to how you approach the client and how you work with them.
Yeah. So specifically, how do you approach that differently now that you're out on your own and not part of a system?
This kind of brings me to just my whole approach, which has changed dramatically in the last couple of years. And while I was working at this behavioral health clinic that I started out at, I got my health coaching certification from the Institute for Integrative Nutrition.
Yeah.
I think growing up, I was very active. I really kind of loved learning about, like, nutrition and eating healthy. And so I just had this passion for overall, like, holistic health and wellness, and just really wanted to learn about natural ways of healing. So that helps me to look at the person from a holistic view and really think about all the different aspects of their life, right? Not just the anxiety or depression, but mm-hmm. their career, their spirituality or faith, their diet, their exercise, all of those things. And most recently, I started learning about the gut-brain connection, and that completely just shifted everything for me, really.
Yeah, because you have said before, you don't know what you don't know until you know it. And, like, that is a phrase, I'm putting that in air quotes, that I absolutely love because it's so true. Like, we just don't know what we don't know. And it's not your therapist's fault that they're not recommending these holistic solutions, because the holistic solutions are not taught in school. So, like, can you share a little bit more about that and how your practice has changed and the things that we should really be looking for?
When I started really learning about gut health, that's really when things started to shift for me, because then I became aware of and had a deeper understanding for how our gut microbiome, you know, has to do with our mood, our feeling states, the way we think, our behaviors. I mean, a lot of our serotonin, a lot of our dopamine, a lot of the important neurotransmitters that really help us to feel better, feel less anxious, have a better mood, are produced and have to do with our gut microbiome. And in mental health, we've learned that there's this chemical imbalance in our brain. That's the main thing that most traditional mental health professionals are aware of. That's the theory that we kind of go off of, mm-hmm. which then triggers this quick, easy medication path that, you know, we've been on. It's just how things have been done. So with this new knowledge, you know, I have a very different approach. I used to, when someone came in and they were struggling and I felt like they could really use some more immediate relief, I would encourage them to see a psychiatrist. And then the psychiatrist would then put them on a medication. And my approach has shifted completely now. I'm having a very different conversation with people. And most people don't necessarily want to go on a medication. They want the natural, you know, holistic method if they can.
Right. Because if we talk about that holistic method, it's helping your body work for you and create that serotonin and dopamine on your own. But let's back up to the clinical, the psychotherapy and just the standard protocol. And you mentioned that previously you would have started therapy with someone and you would have approached it more of a brain issue and encouraged them to see a psychotherapist to get that SSRI because that's the standard protocol.
Yeah.
And in addition to the gut-brain axis, like what other reasons do you have? What's the other encouragement to not be on an SSRI?
Yeah. So this is very interesting because, you know, learning about the gut microbiome has really just led me down this path of like wanting to learn more about like medications and the side effects and the potential dangers and the risks. And so the other thing was, and I don't prescribe, I'm not a psychiatrist, I'm not a doctor, but I am a clinician. So I am seeing these clients and patients consistently, probably more consistently than they are their doctor. So I hear about the side effects that come along with these SSRIs or anti-anxiety meds or mood stabilizers. And it causes problems that I think are unnecessary. You know, like the side effects include weight gain, digestive issues. Sometimes they cause sleep issues. Like sometimes they cause more anxiety. They cause this like, you know, uncomfortable physical sensations in our body. So I feel like I've been hearing about patients having to endure the side effects to get some relief from a medication. So in my mind, it's like there must be a better way than just these psychiatric meds.
Right. But then that goes back to you don't know what you don't know until you know it. So if you are on an SSRI or an anti-anxiety medication, because that's what your therapist and your psychiatrist have, that's the path. And they don't know of another way because this is the standard protocol, correct?
Yes.
So then what is for the person that is in this position and they're like, oh my gosh, yes, I understand the side effects and I understand, but what do you do? How do you get out of that? Like, what is your advice for that?
Well, I think that it's a very personal decision and I wouldn't necessarily encourage someone to just go cold turkey off of a medication. I think the main thing that I would say is really just do your own research around some of these things and have conversations with your providers and be your own advocate. I think one of the things that happens is we go into a doctor's office or we go into a, you know, clinician's office and we just kind of like do what they recommend. And we don't do our own homework. We don't do our own research. We're not our own advocates. And I was guilty of this too. I have my own medication journey. And I think, you know, when I was making a big transition from Connecticut to Florida, I was like feeling all this heightened stress and anxiety around it. And I was like, I don't want to go on another medication. Right. So I started having conversations with people and trying to find new ways. And so now I digress, but
no, but let's talk more about that. So like in your own anxiety journey, because you talk about feelings and feelings are valid. Your feelings are valid and they're not something to suppress. They're something to lean into. Like, let's talk about that with your anxiety. Like, what was your journey and what did you do?
Yeah. So, I mean, I think we can talk about the transition from Connecticut to Florida, because that's, you know, really one of the major life changes that I had recently. I'm in my own therapy, you know, like I have a therapist that I talk to that I love, that I have an incredible rapport with, that I bring all of the things too. So that's one way that I navigate my stress and anxiety. And one of the things that I love to say is that if you're going through a major life transition or you're going through a change, that's one of the best times to create healthier habits for yourself and make positive changes in your life. When I moved from Connecticut to Florida, I was like super excited, but I also felt this anxiety and stress. I started doing things daily that really helped me to feel less anxious and to feel better. So moving my body, diving deeper into the Bible and prayer, which, you know, is a whole like separate conversation in terms of like my faith change. I started on this amazing, you know, gut brain access protocol that I was taking every single day that now I, you know, I swear by and I am obsessed with. So there's things that you can do like on a foundational level that you want to do consistently over time, right? Like the exercise and the prayer, the meditation, whatever it is for you, but you really want to have those practices that are consistent for you. Then there might be those moments where your stress and anxiety is at like an 8, 9, or 10. Right?
Or 15 or 20.
Yeah. And that's when your thinking brain like goes offline. You probably aren't making good decisions. You're reactive. You just want to like have a nervous breakdown. In those moments, there are practical things that you can do like deep breathing exercises or going, you know, actually doing really intense exercise in those moments can be very helpful as well. You know, short bursts of intense exercise. I love taking a kid's mood. Like I used to take anti-anxiety in those moments of like really high stress. And now I pop, you know, I take down my kid's mood, which is amazing.
So can you share the difference between those two? So like, I hope you guys are leaning into this conversation because I am dying right now because I am also moving. And when you talk about the heightened stress of that, there is so much. And having the daily protocol that you talked about, moving your body, journaling, meditating, we dive into the Bible, whatever your faith is, taking that time to really calm your heart and calm your mind and lean into that. Yes. But then having this gut brain access protocol. And for you and I, it's the fundamentals. It's, you know, take this every single day, but then that's your baseline. So let's talk about when your anxiety is at a 29 and you're going off the rails. What is the difference between when you would take an anti-anxiety medication in that moment versus the effects of the kid's mood, if that's what you're doing right now?
I think with a medication, you take the medication and there's this kind of mindset or perspective that we've developed around it and that you take the med and you take the med and then you wait for it to like start to help you feel a little bit better. So in the short term, it could be helpful because your anxiety goes down. But I think we're missing like the bigger picture because people, You want to be able to create the coping skills. You want to be able to learn how to navigate that moment without just going for the quick fix. So I think for me, what's changed both short term and long term is in that moment, I'm like, okay, what is going on right now? What am I feeling? What has triggered this? Am I having an urge to do something reactive or unhealthy? And how can I shift that? Like, I think in the short term, you can help yourself to navigate that moment better. But also in the long term, it helps you in so many ways because you're learning more skills, you're having more self-awareness, you're gaining more control over your emotions, you're becoming more confident because you're like, I could get through this. You just feel more resilient overall. Like, I think, you know, and I think this goes back to like our conversation around this medication piece. There's so many people that go on the medication that don't do the work.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And unpack that. Like, what is the work? So yes, you go to your therapist, then you go to your psychiatrist, you get the SSRI, and then that is not the whole solution.
Well, I think what I'm saying is people go on the medication, they don't necessarily go to the therapist. And I think that's probably one of the downsides of the way that we've addressed mental health. Go to a doctor, get a medication, and that's it. That's really, you know, for many people, that's what they do. And so I think for me, it's like, okay, if you're on the medication, fine. Okay. If that's what you decide is best for you, I'm not anti-medication. I really just want people to be informed, but also like, what's contributing to all of your stress and anxiety? Like, are you really understanding all of the stressors in your life? What's going on? How it's impacting you? Like, that's where the deeper work is. And for me, I believe that we're like always on this journey of self-awareness and growth and evolution. And I think when you can go to a therapist or a counselor or even a coach, you're able to do that deeper work. And I think that's really what leads people to have like a really happier, more meaningful, thriving life.
Yeah.
Right. So, like if you're just taking the medication and not kind of doing that deeper work, then you're kind of just like still struggling and you're faking fine.
Yeah. So for the listener who is in therapy, who thinks that therapy is going quote unquote fine, what are some signs that it's not fine at all? Like, what are some things that we could look for?
So I think there's like two sides to this, because I think on one hand, if you go to therapy and you're not necessarily sharing all of the important details, or you're not being honest and transparent, or you're struggling with that, it's going to be hard for the therapist to help you. It's going to be hard for the therapist to really kind of understand what you're going through and what you're bringing into session and how they can help you. So I think if you're not necessarily feeling like you can completely open up to your therapist, then maybe it's not a good fit. Maybe you're not working with the right person. Maybe you can find someone that would be a better fit. On the other hand, I think if you're not necessarily seeing changes in yourself and you're feeling like you're not making the progress with your therapist, I mean, it could be that it's the wrong fit, or it could be that maybe there's something that the therapist is doing that's not necessarily working, or that doesn't, you know, feel good to you. And you can always have that conversation with your therapist.
What about for the person that has been on an SSRI for, like, you go to therapy, you go to the psychiatrist, you get the SSRI, and 10 years pass and you've been on this drug. What can that person do if they're like, oh, I don't even really know if this is it doing what it's supposed to be doing? I'm just taking it out of routine or out of habit.
I think this is a very personal decision, and I'm not, you know, a medication expert. I'm not a doctor, but if the person is feeling like they've been on it for a long time, I think they can have a conversation with their provider, right? Like, I think always just bring it back to that you're your own advocate. And you can always ask questions around, is this working? What's it doing for me? And you can, you know, make a decision from there about, do you go off the medication? Do you continue to stay on the medication? I think one of the things that I've noticed, especially with this, you know, the gut brain access protocol, and this is just something that I've seen from women that have come to me saying, I want to get off the medication. Like, what do I do? And again, I'm not a doctor. I'm not going to give them, you know, medical advice. But I think if you could nourish your body, like from a nutritional standpoint, then your body can start kind of like building itself up back again, right? Your gut will get healthier. You'll start getting the nutrients that you really need in your body and in your mind. And that could actually be a really great place to start, especially if you're considering that you might not want to be on a medication.
What are some of the signs, the side effects, the things that we could pay attention to, like from an SSRI? Like, maybe we don't even know. Like, maybe I'm on an SSRI and I know I'm on an anti-anxiety med and I know that I'm less anxious, but I don't quite understand. Like, what else should I be looking for?
It really depends on the medication and it depends on the person. I think some of the things that I've been told that have been shared with me and that I've experienced in myself in terms of side effects are weight gain, sexual dysfunction, right? Low libido, digestive issues. Sometimes there's more anxiety, not necessarily less. Emotional numbing is something like you often hear like, oh, I feel like I'm not like the same person that I was. And I feel like I can't cry anymore. Like there's this emotional numbing sometimes that comes with the medication.
And those are all really good things to point out, like just to trade X for Y. And if the med is helping with your anxiety, but you are emotionally numb and you are good with that, then you're good with that. But I think it's really important to understand that that's part of it, because you've shared the gut issues. And when we talk about low libido, like that's another thing that's just going to create a different line of anxiety, because now you're not anxious about one thing, but you're having arguments with your spouse about something else.
Exactly. It brings a host of different issues to the table that maybe you didn't have before.
Right. And you talk about gut issues, and that's a legitimate thing. And I think that we're just not aware of. No one is pointing out like that this SSRI might create gut issues. You just 6 months down the road now have problems and need to connect the dots. And I just think it's really important to share that. And you have said multiple times, you have to be your own advocate, understanding what you're doing. And this is all about just being aware and leaning into your own journey and knowing that there are other solutions out there. Like you talk about kids' mood, knowing that kids' mood is a thing, and it's ancient herbs, saffron, and a few other ingredients, holy basil, that are helping to lower your anxiety. And there are no side effects to that. And you can take it in the moment. And that has helped you on your own anxiety journey.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that you're able to like put modern science with these ancient therapies, these ancient ingredients that all these other countries have been using for years and years, like, why don't we have that here? Like, why aren't more people talking about that? Like, you know, like I think the mental health field is just missing such an important piece of the conversation.
Yeah. And maybe both are for you, but in just understanding that these solutions are out there. And so you have integrated these solutions into your practice. What advice do you have for the listener that's like, okay, I want to know more about what you're talking about? Like, what are you talking about? What's the protocol that you would advise? What's the protocol that Nadia does?
The protocol, it's the fundamentals protocol. You know, the foundational gut brain access protocol and Mood Plus. And of course, you know, kids' mood on hand. Sometimes I take that every day and sometimes I take it in the moment.
Same. I'm on the same protocol. Kids' mood is a pixie stick that you can just shoot. I sometimes like the adult mood, but it helps with your anxiety in the moment. Okay. I have heard that you have shared, you have to name it to tame it. Can you elaborate on that feeling?
Yes, yes, yes. So I love talking about emotional well-being and emotional health, and name it to tame it is a very simple yet effective strategy that you can use if I think at really at any point that you're just noticing maybe your emotion is escalating. And it's really about being able to label and identify whatever it is that you're feeling. Is it anger? Is it anxiety? So you're naming it, right? You're giving it a name, and that will immediately lower the tension and anxiety and stress by like 50%.
Wow.
This was a term coined by Dr. Dan Siegel, who is an amazing doctor and expert in our field. You know, most people are scared of their emotions. Right? Like, I think there's this like negative stigma. And my whole thing is like, you don't have to be afraid of feeling the feeling. And like, as long as you can become more comfortable with tolerating an uncomfortable feeling, the better you'll be able to regulate it and control it. And like, who doesn't want to become in more control of their emotions?
Oh my, right? I needed you 9 years ago to share this with me. When my husband died, I know that I couldn't name it to tame it. I just suppressed it and trudged forward because I didn't know of another way. And we talk about therapy, and I went to therapy, and maybe I wasn't partnered with the right therapist, but I also didn't understand how to find that right therapist. And I also was so stressed. And as I have come to learn 9 years later, it was anxiety that was unnamed and untamed. And I just was running rampant with it. So to 9 years ago, Dana, what advice would you have had to share how for me to find a therapist, for me to find the person? Do you have, can we walk back in time and can you give me advice?
Well, where was I 9 years ago? And why were I don't know. 9 years ago? So I think it depends, right? Like if you, I'm a private pay therapist. I don't take insurance. I'm on social media. I have a website. So, I mean, you could start with Google, but there's also these amazing, you know, resources for people that want to go through their insurance. You can also like, I guess maybe this is part of like the faking fine conversation. Like, did people know that you were in therapy? Like, did you feel comfortable telling people that you wanted to go felt like you wanted to go to a therapist?
Everyone, and this goes back to, I don't know which episode where I talk about all of the should do's. Everyone, I needed to be in therapy. That was one thing I should do. And I needed to be on Prozac. That was another thing that I should do. And so I did it. I did the SSRI. And I had the effects, that the numbing effects that you talked about. Like, yeah. Yes, I was less anxious, but I had no feelings. I didn't care about anything. And I was like, this is ridiculous. I need to be able to feel the feelings in order for me to be able to work through to do the work.
Yeah. Well, you went through a very traumatic situation too. You lost your husband in a very short amount of time.
Right.
And so I think when something like that happens, you're in survival mode, mm-hmm. right? Like you're living in this like fight or flight place. So it's really hard, I think, to kind of take a moment and say, okay, like, what do I need right now? And I don't know, maybe the therapist at the time wasn't a good fit. I don't know how you felt with that person, but you can search online for a therapist. You can talk to your friends and family about a therapist. There are these like newer resources that are, you know, coming to life, which I love, that are enabling therapists to be connected to insurance companies if that's the route that someone wants to take as well. That can help you find a good provider.
100%. And yes, I don't think that therapist was the right fit for me. And I didn't like the feeling of the SSRI. And I just quit because that was what I was being encouraged to do. And I stopped. And I am on the same protocol that you are on, and with the fundamentals and mood, which I kind of stumbled into after therapy. I didn't go into this thinking this is going to help with my anxiety. I had no clue that I had anxiety. I just knew that I was stressed and kind of a brat. Like I had no stress resilience, and I was very short-tempered. I knew those were facts, but I didn't connect that to having anxiety. But then once I was on the fundamentals with Mood Plus, all of a sudden my stress came down and I was able to say, oh, maybe therapy. Oh, what is the other work that I could be doing? Because sometimes you lay out, here are three things that you should do. And I was so overwhelmed that I was like, I can't even. You want me to read my Bible? Are you kidding me? I can't even sit still to like read three lines. Like I just couldn't absorb it. So I think that that's important to understand also.
Well, and that's the hope with when we were talking about before, someone comes into my office and I feel like they're at this, you know, 8, 9, 10 place. How are they going to access therapy? How are they going to be able to take in what we're talking about or what I'm teaching them or what we're trying to work on? And actually, you know, a lot of the work happens outside of session. Mm-hmm. That's where the magic happens. You take what you learn, you know, you take what you've been given and you use it in your life. That's where, again, the real magic happens. I agree with you. I had that similar experience with the fundamentals that I didn't have with the medication. I felt like you could feel the difference of when the cortisol is lower and your stress and your anxiety is lower and you see things more clearly.
That is 100% it. You see things more clearly.
Yeah.
And yes, yeah, the magic happens outside of therapy. And maybe that therapist that I had gone to, I mean, not maybe, he was giving me good tactical things that I should do, but I couldn't lean into actually doing them. The only thing I could do is exercise. That was the only thing I knew that worked.
Yeah.
And you can't do enough exercise in a day in order to. I got really skinny. I was like at my fittest point after Jason died, but it's yes. So Nadia, how can we follow you? Like, how do we follow you on social? What's your website? How can we connect with you outside of this?
Yeah. I mean, my handle is at Nadia E. Fiorita on Instagram, and I'm on TikTok, which I'm loving, by the way. Yeah. So I would definitely encourage you to follow me on Instagram. I'm loving all of the short form video and reels. So,
oh my God, you drop such good information in reels on both Instagram and on TikTok. Okay. You have created a calm, chaotic to calm guide. We all need this. You guys, we all need this. Can you share more about that? How can we grab your chaotic to calm guide right now?
Okay. So I've created this amazing free guide. It's called From Chaotic to Calm. And I just wanted to illustrate and share four really kind of simple yet effective strategies to help someone reduce anxiety, regulate emotion, and feel more in control and more empowered. And these are, you know, such valuable tips. I feel like women, and I mean, and men and kids really just want things that they can use in the moment, right? And I think, like, overall, there's been this movement in mental health that we want to make things more accessible and more simple. So I would definitely encourage you to get this guide. I dropped some pro tips in it as well. And I've been getting such amazing feedback on it. So
yes. And the guide is where? Where is it?
Instagram. So you can go to my bio on Instagram and very easy to do. Yeah.
Okay. So spell out your name for us so that we can Google it right now. How do we, Nadia Fiorita?
It's Nadia. F as in Frank. I always say F as in Frank. Iorita.
I love it. And that's so funny because my maiden name is LaFranca. And I said the same thing. L-A, F as in Frank, R-A-N-C-A. Like, it's just a thing. Oh my goodness, you guys. Okay. So first and foremost, if you want to lean in to these holistic protocols, if you want to chat with Nadia about maybe if she is a good fit for therapy or if she knows someone, DM her on Instagram. Start the conversation, because at the end of the day, we all have to be our own advocates. I learned that firsthand being in the hospital with my husband in his cancer journey. I very quickly realized that we were getting churned through the system, and you need to be your own advocate. And I just can't express how important that is, and that the minute you turn off your brain to hand it to someone else, they might have, like, the therapist, the doctor has the best of intentions for the information that they know, but you have to be your own advocate. Okay, Nadia, I have one last question that I ask everyone on the podcast. Is there someone who you witnessed stop faking fine that has inspired you to show up and do so for yourself?
Ooh, that's a good question. Can I say you?
Oh, really?
Yes. Oh my God. I mean, I don't know. How long have we known each other? We've, like, developed this amazing relationship. I've watched you be a speaker at the Amari Global Convention, speak at Live Out Loud. Like, you have absolutely inspired me. You've launched this podcast. Like, yes.
Oh my gosh. That makes my heart so warm. Yes.
Aww.
Thank you. Yay. And thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you so much for being on this podcast. And you guys, you definitely need to connect with Nadia. She is the bomb and an amazing human. So thank you for being here. You guys, make it a fantastic day.
Yes. Thank you, Dana.
Okay, if you are listening and thinking the fundamentals in kids' mood, oh, that sounds amazing. I want to learn more. Stick with us. I will have all of the links in the show notes for you to connect with Nadia and connect with these amazing solutions.
Remember to show up for yourself unapologetically, because while your circumstances may not be 100% your fault, your life is 100% your responsibility. I cannot wait to see you soar.